This judge, he sounds just awful, right? He's cold and disconnected, apathetic. And yet, his inaction and the misuse of power has finally caught up with him. He now finds himself being pestered by a widow day after day. He has not served her with justice, and he is now hearing about it endlessly. Jesus explains that he is giving us this parable as an illustration of our need to pray always and not lose heart. And with this introduction, we usually then hear an invitation to emulate the persistent widow. And we should be so bold and unrelenting in our demand for justice. And we should take heart in remembering that God will be far more compassionate than this unjust judge. And remembering how Jesus uses parables to upend our assumptions and our simple ordering of the world, I have to ask, where else is the Holy speaking here? If I'm really honest, I can relate to that judge. I can. I know I'm supposed to be inspired by the faithful witness of this widow, but really? I get him. I wonder if his ambivalence was born out of his privilege, or if his comfortable wealth leads to numbing. I wonder if deep beneath his utter lack of respect for the world, I wonder if beneath all that is a fear of how painful change would be. And I feel for the judge. I mean, I bet he has more on his docket than he has time. Maybe the requests are about things that he can't change. Maybe he feels like his hands are tied. It's just bureaucracy. It's not his fault, it's just a job. But the demands come. He is stuck. And so maybe he relies on his power to numb himself to the pain that accompanies all this clamoring. When we think we can't right the wrong in front of us, sometimes it is easier to not even try. How do we do the same? How do we choose apathy and numbness over the pain of transformation into justice? I think many of us know the judge's way. This way of choosing to skirt around the discomfort and heartache of injustice. Too often, I think many of us use our privilege, and specifically our money, as an escape route. I know I do. When I feel overwhelmed, or lonely, or sad, or exhausted, it feels a lot easier to just buy something. It does. It feels easier to buy something than to just be present to those feelings and to the truth that may stand behind them. Something delicious down on Shattuck, or something ostensibly useful and conveniently available the very same day on Amazon Prime. Its own ethical quandary, of course. Or maybe some clothes used or on sale to heighten the ease of justification. But with all of them, these creature comforts, none of them inherently bad, they compound to service the numbing. This consumption is a formidable opponent to justice. It satiates without feeding the real hunger. It lulls me into ambivalence, still disconnected, still stuck before injustice? Does this sound familiar to anyone else here? Some nods, yes, good. Not the only one. And yet here is this widow demanding another way. So often, widows in the Bible are representative of the most vulnerable and dependent in society. And yes, kept outside of the patriarchal economic system, poverty was generally their lot. Oh, but this widow is not so timid, is she? Again and again, she returns to the judge, to the seat of power, demanding justice. Unwavering, unrelenting, bold. Finally, coming to see that she will not give up, we hear that the judge caves to the widow's demands so that she may not wear him out. The longer I sit with this passage, the more curious I get about this relentless pursuit of justice. And so what if we do acknowledge that we may have some things in common with that judge? How are we too comfortable, too complacent, too annoyed? What if the widow here is speaking for God? Can we hear this one coming to us again and again demanding justice? Do we even see her? Sometimes. Often not. What if through her, God is tirelessly asking us to reach for justice, asking us to be transformed when we feel most stuck? Now, there are many different ways that we can live into this continuous call for justice. But as I wonder about the role of privilege in the judge's actions, and reflect on all the resources that our stewardship team has been guiding us through in recent weeks, I see the question of how we use the tool of money sitting squarely in front of me, which I don't love. I don't like this question any more than you do. And yet the questions come. Questions like, how do we use money to practice respecting all? Something that this judge openly acknowledges that he does not do. Or, how does our use of money lift up or hinder justice? Or, how do we use money as a method of praying always and yet not lose heart? How do we use money courageously and faithfully? It's not easy. Using it as a shield or as a weapon or as a self-tranquilizer, that's easier, or it seems easier. And yet here is this widow begging us day after day to soften our hearts and consider another way. And so as I get ready to pledge next week towards our collective kingdom work, as I get ready to pledge my money towards the ways that we collectively at All Souls work for justice, I have to pause. I have to consider my practices again, what they are now, and what I want them to be. That's part of what I love about this rhythm of pledging and giving. It invites us to practice, to open ourselves to that mighty woman demanding our participation in building a more just world day after day. We're invited to take stock, to actually become brave and bold enough to look at the numbers, all the actual numbers of what we earn and what we give. And with the power of that raw knowledge, we're invited to prayerfully discern how to bring that giving number into alignment with our professed values. And then, week by week, or month by month, we get to try living it out. This way is a practice. Justice does not happen overnight. She keeps coming, begging us for justice, asking us to see, to turn, to change. But praying into it, doing our best not to lose heart, it can begin to shift. When Jesse and I began tithing here in 2014, honestly, it seemed like a really bad idea. I was afraid that we wouldn't be able to pull it off. Or maybe worse yet, I feared that we would and that I would be miserable for it. And it hasn't always been easy, but it is changing me for the better. And so as much as my opponents, those beasts of spending, of consuming, of being entertained, as much as they still taunt me, promising fulfillment and connection, I know that generally they just deliver more numb complicity. And so we are tithing again this year. It's one way for us to practice allowing ourselves to enter into this transformation and reach for another way. Collectively, we can keep praying into this change of heart. Sometimes action comes first, as with the judge, before we're convinced that it will make a difference. But still, we can begin peeling back the apathy, setting aside the comfort that can grow toxic, and holding on to our hearts instead. Through it all, God remains. She keeps showing up, demanding justice. This widow is absolutely unrelenting. She reminds us again and again who we are and how to live into this love.